What came next is intended for mature audiences only. Episodes discuss topics that can be triggering, such as emotional, physical, and sexual violence, animal abuse, suicide, and murder. I am not a therapist, nor am I a doctor. If you're in need of support, please visit somethingwaswrong.com/resources for a list of nonprofit organizations that can help. Opinions expressed by my guests on the show are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of myself or Broken Cycle Media. Resources and source material are linked in the episode notes. Thank you so much for listening. Marina Lacerda is a survivor and mother from Brazil. In her youth, she emigrated to New York with her mother in hopes of forging a new life. Almost immediately, Marina would begin to face sexual and physical violence that normalized a long cycle of abuse. By the time she was 14, Marina would be introduced to Jeffrey Epstein, a man that seemed to symbolize success and wealth, but only added to her trauma. Eventually, Marina would play a part in both of the FBI's attempts at prosecuting Epstein in 2008 and 2019, when during the latter, she would be dubbed Minor Victim 1. Marina's journey is a testament to the impact of the cycle of abuse, but it's also a testament to her personal resilience and strength. The Broken Cycle Media team is incredibly honored she was willing to share her story with our audience, and that she continues to be transparent about her healing journey in the name of advocacy.
Hello, thank you for having me. My name is Marina Lacerda. I'm 37 years old. I'm from Brazil. I have one daughter and I have four dogs who I absolutely love. They're all like my five kids. I started dancing ballet in Brazil when I was 4 years old. I fell in love with it. My uncle used to actually pay for the classes. My mother was struggling to take care of me. I used to do shows in Belo Horizonte in Brazil, which is the main theater in the city of Belo Horizonte. My mom came to America when I was 7 years old, and she left me behind for a year just to get her things together. I was surrounded by family, my grandparents, my uncle, my aunts. My father was with me at the time. My father never did anything wrong to me. I just never really connected to my father. I think he was missing a lot of my growing up in Brazil. He would be in and out from Belo Horizonte to Rio de Janeiro. So I really didn't get to see him that much. I think I went through a very tough time when I was in Brazil and I was away from my mom. I developed this scare of dying. I think till today, I'm trying to heal from that. All I dreamed of that year that I was in Brazil was, I can't wait to be with my mom and we're going to be in America. I can't believe my mom is doing this. She arrived to New York. She met a boyfriend of hers and brought me here a year later when I was 8 years old. My uncle was the one that brought me. When he brought me, my stepfather, who was my mom's boyfriend, was already living with my mom. And my uncle and my mom had an argument about it. My uncle didn't want to leave me in New York with her. And my mom was like, no, this is my daughter. I think he felt it right there and then. So when I came, my mom brought me to Astoria Park. And if people are listening, they're from New York, they're going to know Astoria Park right away. And when I arrived, it was July 5th. We were right by the water. And she said to me, you'll never forget that you came here because yesterday was America's independence. Yesterday marks a very important date in this country. Right there and then, I was like, this is insane. I'm coming to America, but I'm coming the day of the birth of America. I moved to New York, Astoria, Queens. Where we first moved was on Steinway Street. It was on top of King's Deli, which is still there. It was like a little studio. I didn't care where we were going to be as long as we were together. Coming here opened up so many doors to the dancing world, ballet, jazz, and tap, point ballet. I was like, whoa, this is a whole new world. I ended up getting a scholarship to do point classes for free. I think dance is not only something that we love to do to perform, but it's also a way to express ourselves when we're feeling sad, when we're feeling happy, when we're feeling angry. I think it's a great way to heal. My uncle brought me to go see Cats, which was my first Broadway show. And automatically I was like, I'm going to be on Broadway. And that was my dream. That was my goal. And I was so inspired by Manhattan, New York City. When I came to America, maybe 3 months, 4 months in, my stepfather started turning on porn and he would lay my head in his lap and he would put a cover over my head. So he really introduced me to abuse. I spent maybe a year and a half getting abused by him and not saying anything and totally thinking that it was normal. As a child, you really don't know what's happening to you. A year and a half later, I started to definitely feel annoyed and understanding that I was wrong until my mother caught us in the bedroom. My sister was already born at the time and she was in the crib. And my mother walked in and he literally threw me off the bed. And my mom called him in the kitchen and was screaming at him and cursing at him. Right after that, she comes in the room and she basically said that she was very sorry that that was happening to me. And she started to explain to me what sexual abuse was. She's like, you don't ever have to worry. He's never, ever going to do that to you. And at that time, I thought, okay, it's over. He knows he did it wrong. I was wrong as well, but I was not wrong. I was a child. I even felt bad that I had done that to my mom. A month later, my stepfather started to sexually abuse me again, and it started to get worse. He then began to slowly get me into being more open to penetration to me. I told my mom, I'm like, he's doing it again. So my mom would go and scream at him and fight with him, and then he would stop. And that went on until I was 12 years old. Me and my mom got into numerous arguments because I started to get really upset because I started to then reject my stepfather, and then he started to physically abuse me. He would kick me, he would hit me when I didn't want to do it or if I wanted to tell my mom. My mom knew what was going on and would leave the house to go to the supermarket, and I would sit by my window with my legs crossed and I would pray, please God, don't let this man come in here and disturb me. The neighbor downstairs knew the problem in the house. My best friend's family knew the problem of the house. The community started to quickly know what was going on and nobody ever contacted the police. I was feeling frustrated. I was feeling lost. I was feeling hopeless, feeling like this is going to be my life until I'm 18, until I have to leave the house. And I couldn't depend on my mom to protect me. There's nobody I turn to except to God, to beg him, like, why is this happening to me? What did I ever do wrong? This whole story, the most sad part is that my mom wasn't there for me and she wasn't able to protect me. And I think that was the biggest abuse. It wasn't even my stepfather. It wasn't even Jeffrey Epstein. I think it's my mom that plays a big role in this. I used to do anything not to come home. I'd go to my best friend's house. I'd be out in the street. I'd be in Burger King. I didn't care. I just didn't want to be home. One day we had a roommate. She was in her late 20s. And she came to me at Burger King and she was like, I know your stepfather's abusing you and he's doing the same thing to me and I want to go to the police. I literally jumped out of my chair and I was like, let's go. I didn't even think twice. And when I did go to the police, they were very aggressive with me. They didn't believe me. They said that I was jealous of my newborn sister and they questioned me to the T. Like in the movies with a little light over your head, the room was dark. They were pressuring me, telling me that I was lying. Matter of fact, I didn't fully tell my story because I didn't want to tell them that my mother knew because I was going to get taken away from my mom. I didn't want to tell them the extent of time that my stepfather abused me because I was feeling bad for him to go to jail. So I undertold my story right after my mom came and my mom's first question was, what did you tell them? And I told her, I only told them that he's been abusing me for 2 years. Didn't tell them that he raped me. I just said that he was sexually abused and didn't tell them that he was physically abusing me. He ended up getting 5 years of probation. I think he did 6 months in jail. When we came home, my mom was destroyed. And all those times when I kept telling my mom, like, why don't you leave him? Her answer was, financially, we won't be able to do it. We are immigrants. We cannot go to the police. There was always a reason why, an excuse. The craziest part is my mom was trying to help him get out of jail, paying for his bond, and also getting him a lawyer. She was destroyed. She didn't talk to me. Very soon, she started to blame me. This is the reason why that we're here. This is the reason why you can't go to ballet classes anymore. Now we have to rent out all of our rooms and sleep in one room. She didn't work. She didn't start working. I had to start working. I was working in a Greek nightclub and I would sell flowers. Greeks have this tradition to throw flowers on singers. Back then, people would hire you. They would not care. If you looked like you were 16, 17 and you told them you were 18, they didn't give a fuck. You were able to get away with things back then a little bit different than you are now. I didn't even need ID. I was getting paid under the table. I became the man of the house at 13, 14 years old. And that was a lot of pressure on me. I didn't see it like that. I just seen it like, thank God I'm free. I have nobody disturbing my peace. Even though my mom hated me, I was still very, very happy that he was no longer in our lives. And I see her as a victim too today. But as a mother today, I would not let anybody lay a finger on my daughter. When I went to school, I was in just culture shock. I really got made fun of from the third grade until the seventh grade. And I really didn't fit in until about eighth grade. Eighth grade brought me to that cool world. And I ended up meeting the wrong people. Right after that, in that summer, is when I met Jeffrey Epstein. Growing up, I was like, I want to be a ballerina. I want to be on Broadway. I want to chase my dreams. And here my mom is telling me to find a rich man that can take care of me because she was born in 1958. I guess that time was the man took care of you. When I met Jeffrey Epstein, I was like, well, this is the rich man. I knew that he wasn't going to marry me, but I thought at the time he was going to help me some way or somehow. That was drilled into my head, starting from my mom and then starting with the girl that introduced me to him. We were actually going to go out. She called me over her house. She's like, listen, I know where you're going through. I just want to tell you, I know this really rich guy. He's very powerful. He lives in a huge mansion in Manhattan. It'd be really great for you to meet him. And all he wants is a massage with a girl with like a bikini top, just like your bra. She made it sound like it was so easy. And coming from already an abusive place with my stepfather, I was like, this is not bad. I'm going to give this man a massage. He's going to give me $300. I was like, maybe I'll just have enough time and money to really go back to my ballet and my passion. When we went to his house, we took a cab. I would always take the subway everywhere. A cab was like a privilege. It was on 9 East 71st Street. It's between 5th and Madison. I got there and I was like, holy shit, where the fuck am I? Just pressing the doorbell from that man's house, this is another level. So when we got to the front door and I saw these big wooden doors, it had an intercom. And when they opened the door and a maid approaches the door dressed as a maid, and I could see there were other doors behind it, his chandeliers, I was like, holy crap. And when I stepped into his office, the ceilings were so tall. I was so shocked by everything and so wowed by everything that when we walked in, me and the girl, I was whispering to her because I felt so uncomfortable to be myself because I didn't know how to act. I'm used to Astoria, Queen Street. Then I come in there and it's like, whoa, fancy schmancy. The maid took us upstairs. She's like, Jeffrey's ready for you guys. She took us to the elevator. We went up to the third floor. And when she opened up the doors, it was a hallway and it had pictures and paintings of different parts of women's bodies, sometimes their whole body, and women who were shaved, had full hair. I didn't think anything of it. And when we stepped in the room, it was so dark. His ceilings had clouds on it. It was like so nice, so relaxing, so peaceful. He walks in his robe and he's like, hey, I'm Jeffrey. And I'm like, hi, I'm Marina. And he shook my hand. And he's like, I've heard some great things about you. He asked me a little bit where I was from, how old I was, what my aspirations were. He just started to get to know me, and I started to break down my story a little bit. And I think that's where I went wrong, when I started to tell him that I was taking care of my family. And I think right there and then he was like, perfect. I don't have to do much to this girl. She just needs money to really take care of her family. But I thought by me telling him the story, that now would only help me financially, but it would help me grow in other ways. And it did not. It made it easier for him to groom me and not really tell me, hey, I'm going to put you in Victoria's Secret. Hey, I'm going to put you on Broadway. It was just more like, you want money? You need this? Then you got to do this. Then the young girl told me to take off my shirt. I took off my shirt and he turned around and he was like, take off your bra. And I was like, no. I looked at the girl like, what the hell? She was like, come on, Marina, take off your bra. Get comfortable. And I'm like, no, I'm not comfortable. And it was peer pressure on both sides. And I stuck to my no. And he was enticed by that. He loved the challenge. I ended up not taking my shirt off and feeling very uncomfortable because then he started to touch himself. And the other young lady, she started to touch him and he started to aggressively jerk off. And I was like, holy crap. And she was pinching his nipples and it was like, what the fuck is going on here? He climaxed and he turned around to me and he said, don't worry, you'll like me. You'll get to know me and you'll be very comfortable very soon. He's like, I'll be seeing you again. And I said, okay, it was nice to meet you. We put our shirts back on and she put her bra back on. We got out of there and she was like, what the fuck? Why didn't you take off your bra? I was like, because that's not what we spoke about. I said, there's many other things in there that happened that we did not speak about. Why weren't you just honest with me? She's like, because you would have came either way. So what does it matter? I said, maybe I would have not came. And it would have been nice for you to be honest. I'm embarrassed that I not only told this person no, but I'm embarrassed that I had to sit there throughout whatever you guys were doing. And she was like, listen, Marina, I love you, but any other girl in the Brazilian community would have been more than happy to meet this man. And the money that you just made, and she threw it at me, she was like, you're not making this anywhere else. You need to thank me for introducing you to this man. This man is going to help you out. Nobody's going to help you out in Astoria, Queens. There's no hope for you there. This is the person who's going to help get you to places. I was like, I'm not coming back. 2 weeks later, she calls me and she's like, hey, Jeffrey asked about you. He absolutely loves you and wants to see you. And I was like, I don't mind giving him a massage, but I'm not comfortable with the rest. And at the time, I didn't have the nightclub anymore. The nightclub closed down. So I was really struggling at home. I was working a regular job. I think at the time I was getting paid $7.50 an hour, if I'm not mistaken. It was like, all right, well, I'll go back, but he has to take it slow because I'm not ready for all this. And he did. He took it very slow. Little by little, he groomed me a little bit more. And that's how I got trapped in that world of Jeffrey Epstein. I didn't get to live my childhood. I was being abused from starting the age of 8. It truly fucked me up in a sense where I ended up not only in Jeffrey Epstein's hands, but many other abuses. In the beginning, I used to see Jeffrey a whole bunch of times, sometimes 3 to 4 times a week. It depended really how many times he was in New York. And being the fact that I was new to his realm and to his circle of girls, I was pretty much top demand for him. Leslie Groff would call me a lot of times and ask me if I was free. Next thing you know, me and Jeffrey Epstein are having sex and he's raping me. Not only is he raping me, he's using me like as a doll. He would pick me up and put me on top of him. He would tell me what to do and he would tell the other girls, this is what you're supposed to do. This is what a good girl does. She listens to me, she does what I say, and she does it right. And now you guys need to start doing that. And I even forgot about that. One of the other survivors that I talked to had to remind me of that. And I was in total shock. I was like, holy shit, I cannot believe I did that. He did not traffic me to other people or anything like that. The only other person that I was trafficked to was Ghislaine, which was one time. We went into his bedroom. Ghislaine walked in and he didn't even make an introduction. He just said, a friend of mine will be joining us. I can't remember the full details of what happened, but I know a lot of things definitely happened. Whether we want to say it or not, Jeffrey Epstein was very charismatic. And when I go back and I think about it, he just had such a way to groom us. And that's why when you hear some of the survivors, they are like, well, I thought he was my boyfriend. And they were extremely upset about when he went to jail. I definitely know he wasn't my boyfriend. I definitely know he was taking advantage of me. Being to a prior abuse, which had caused so much damage in my life, I wasn't done processing that. I started to cut school, not because I didn't want to go to school, but because I was fucking tired because I started working at night as well. So I would come home 5 in the morning and I'd had to be up by 8 o'clock. At times I would bring home $2,000-$3,000 a month with seeing Jeffrey Epstein and working this nightlife that I was working. I wanted to drop out of high school because I started to see Jeffrey Epstein and I was like so tied up to his times and his needs. And I would end up in places like Beach Bum, which is where you go tanning. And I would have a friend of mine. Actually, that girl is the one that introduced me to Jeffrey Epstein. She would cut classes with me. And my mom walks in. I turn around. I'm like, what are you doing here? And she's like, I have the same question for you. What are you doing here? We'll talk when you get home. And when I went home, she was like, so you're cutting classes? I was like, well, I'm extremely tired. And I just feel like there's no point in me going to school when I'm making all this money and I'm paying for all the bills. Right away, she turned around to me. She was like, you want to drop out of high school? She's like, that's fine. We'll go to school and I'll drop you out. And she dropped me out of high school. It was that easy. When I look back today and everyone asks me, do you have any regrets? Do you have any regrets? I'm like, nope, I would do it all over again the same way. I think the only thing different, I would definitely push myself to have that high school diploma. It came to a point where he just got tired of me because that's how Jeffrey Epstein is. When he's used you enough, he's just tired and he really wants someone new and exciting to his circle. And that's really when he started to ask me if I had friends to bring him. When I became close to 17, he already had seen that I was bringing him girls of the age of 17, 18, and 19, and 20, because really a 17-year-old is not going to be hanging out with a 14, 15-year-old. He got frustrated with me. He thought one of the girls that I brought him looked extremely old, and he pulled me on the side and he was like, what the fuck are you bringing me? This girl's fucking old, man. He's like, I don't want this. I'm starting not to trust you. He's like, you're going to have to start bringing me IDs so that I can make sure that they are under the age that I want. He's seen that I couldn't provide him with what he liked. I was working in a different coffee shop in Astoria. We were busy from open until like 2-3 in the morning. I was making so much money in that place. When they asked me how old I was, I told them I was 18, but I was really 17. So when my birthday came and I turned 18, they're like, oh my God, you're 19. I'm like, yeah. They didn't even bother to ask me for my ID. They just trusted me. I would start sometimes 2-3 in the afternoon and leave 2 in the morning. Or I would have the morning schedule, which was 8 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock in the afternoon. Or sometimes I'd do a double. And then if I do a double and if there was a busboy missing, guess what? Who was the busboy? Guess who was the hostess when the hostess didn't come in? So I was doing sometimes 2 to 3 different jobs in one workplace. So I was very tired. And at that point, I was already living by myself when I was 15 and a half. My stepfather moved back home, so I moved out at 16. Jeffrey just got tired of me. He told me personally, he was like, you're getting old. And I no longer was the fun Marina that Jeffrey Epstein would use.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. Next week on What Came Next.
They knocked on my door and they were like, this is the FBI. We need to talk to you about Jeffrey Epstein. And I was like, nope, nope, nope. And I closed the door and the FBI agent, she dropped her card and she's like, you better call us fast. They were so aggressive. They definitely treated me like I was a perpetrator. So it was very hard for me. I had called Jeffrey Epstein up right after the FBI left my house. I said, listen, I'm going to end up telling them everything that I know because I can't be in trouble with the law.
What Came Next is a Broken Cycle Media production, co-produced by Amy B. Chesler and Tiffany Reese. If you'd like to help support What Came Next, you can leave us a positive review, support our sponsors, or follow Broken Cycle Media on Instagram at Broken Cycle Media. Check out the episode notes for sources, resources, and to follow our guests. Thank you again for listening.